this is Our American Stories, and it's time for our regular series called Final Thoughts, where we hear final thoughts from people who are dying, and also final thoughts from folks about their loved ones, eulogies, tributes, etc. Anything that stirs the soul about someone lost. This week's Final Thoughts feature is from Tim Carney. Tim is the senior political columnist for the Washington Examiner and a visiting fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. His story is about his late nephew, J.P. Kilner, whose namesake, Pope John Paul II, was born on this day in history in 1920. Here is Tim's moving tribute.
Nothing can prepare you for seeing your one-year-old nephew in a casket. Nothing can take away his parents' agony, and nobody could have expected how much good work this helpless baby would do in just 14 months. John Paul Kilner was born with an advanced case of spinal muscular atrophy. He was nearly paralyzed at birth, and his body just deteriorated further as he grew. My sister-in-law Elena and her husband Pat brought JP home as soon as possible and began the 24-hour-a-day job of keeping him alive. Someone was always at JP's side, monitoring blood oxygen levels, suctioning mucus through his tracheostomy tube. If Elena's younger sister, Suzanne, who then became a nurse, or a hired nurse named Denise weren't on duty, either Pat or Elena just did without sleep. Daily saving the life of an immobile kid with a fatal disease raises some fundamental questions. What is the point of such a life? That raises a prior question. What is the purpose of any life? Pat and Elena are devout Catholics from strong families, but their answer to this question can't be set aside as some teaching in the catechism. It's a truth written on the human heart. Jesus said,
"Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment, and the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments."
This is our purpose. This view is not uniquely Christian. It's understood in other religions and in secular worldviews. In this regard, John Paul lived a superior life. He exuded love. Before he lost control of his facial muscles, he beamed smiles that, on multiple occasions, made grown men literally sob. Babies can love those around them with the pure, unconditional love that we all should show. Also, JP drew love out of others. Neighbors, relatives, strangers cooked meals, gave time and equipment and money to help the Kilners. JP's brothers and sisters showered him with affection, and Pat and Elena sacrificed immensely to care for him. Before the wake at St. Patrick's in Rockville, during an observance called Stations of the Cross, we read a gospel passage in which Christ explains our duty to feed the hungry, to clothe the naked, and to visit the sick.
"Whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers of mine, you did for me."
Clearly a call to charity, this is also an exaltation of parenthood. Even more so, this exalts the work of caring for helpless JP. Tribulations both reveal character and form it. JP's struggles revealed his parents' heroic virtue and fostered virtue in others. Pat and Elena saw John Paul as a blessing, and they generously shared that blessing with the world. They took him wherever they could, in a chair rigged with a ventilator and an IV. Elena shared even wider by penning hopeful, contemplative letters to John Paul every few weeks, which she posted on a blog. One friend of mine, who never met the Kilners, read the Letters to John Paul blog. She wrote me, "John Paul's story made me want to be a better person." John Paul continued shaping souls even in dying. A priest at St. Patrick's took confessions during and after the wake. He commented afterwards that he heard some of the more honest, searching, and contrite confessions he's ever heard. More than 500 people attended the funeral. One non-Catholic mourner was moved so much by the Mass, she told Pat, "Now I understand why you're Catholic." So John Paul, who never spoke a word in his life, was the greatest evangelist of love, faith, virtue, and hope I have ever met. I don't think Pat and Elena foresaw all this as they sacrificed and toiled for JP. They just did what was right, understanding the, quote, incomparable worth of the human person, in the words of JP's namesake, Pope John Paul II. Father Drew Royals, Pat's high school friend, gave the homily. He said to Pat and Elena, "You saw so clearly that John Paul's life possessed a dignity that was radically equal to that of everybody else. His medical condition was simply the battlefield upon which this young warrior prince would carry out his campaign." At the funeral mass, we mourned a calamity. The pain of JP's death pierces the heart again and again. Also, we thanked God that we were blessed with John Paul for 442 days. Father Drew reminded us, "This blessing carries with it a great responsibility. If our love for this little one has enlarged our hearts, then that means that now we must love all the more. Your work is not done."
And this is Lee Habib. That was Tim Carney. And John Paul's story made me want to be a better person. My favorite line from that piece. And of course, it's true, as John Paul II said, it proved the incomparable worth of the human person. This is Lee Habib. Final thoughts, our American stories. More after these messages.
Like campfires? How about a campfire atmosphere with friends and brought to your ears wherever you are? That's what we do at Our American Stories. A show that tells great American stories of love, final thoughts before dying, funny stories about first jobs, this day in history, American dreams and marriages, and so much more. And then here's your stories on these big topics live every weeknight. Or listen online at ouramericannetwork.org. We'll hope you join the campfire and call in with your stories.
Are you tired of all the talk about politics? How about talking about paychecks? Because that's what the Job Creators Network does. It's the voice of real job creators that's been missing. Led by Home Depot founder Bernie Marcus, over 50 job creators across the country are members.
Home Depot, if we started it today, we could never have succeeded with today's regulations.
Your voice is needed. If you're a job creator and interested in learning more, visit jobcreatorsnetwork.com.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs, and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
John Nichols was making major strides in his career when at age 32, a water skiing accident left him critically injured. Fortunately, he had disability insurance.
For me, disability insurance was the safety net. I did not have to worry about the bills. I did not have the financial concerns.
Thanks to disability insurance that John had through work and on his own, he continued to receive an income until he could return to work. Learn more at protectyourpaycheck.org, a message from the Nonprofit Life Foundation.
This is David Cordani, CEO of Cigna. For more than 20 years, Cigna has worked with the March of Dimes to address premature births in the U.S. Premature births cause horrible suffering and cost billions of dollars each year. That's why Cigna is committed to raising funds and awareness through our employees, family, and friends to improve the health of moms and babies. Please join us in supporting the March for Babies. Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
This is Lee Habib, and this is Our American Stories. And we love Shark Tank. And once a week, we bring you the best of Shark Tank. It's killing it on Friday nights on ABC. And my goodness, CNBC is getting its greatest ratings in history at night, running, I think, an endless loop of Shark Tank and The Prophet. Two faves here at Our American Stories. And so what was up last week? Well, Adam was in the tank with his company that provides an adult sleepaway camp.
My name is Adam Tischauer, and I'm the founder and head camper of Camp No Counselors. Camp No Counselors is an all-inclusive sleepaway camp for grown-ups.
Dodgeball!
Where adults get to play like kids again, competing in activities like dodgeball, three-legged races, zip lining, and we even have a giant slip and slide. I wasn't always a head camper. My first job was finance in New York City, working in a cubicle. I was working around the clock and just needed to get away for a weekend. I decided to rent out a sleepaway camp and invite my friends, and they told their friends. 90 people signed up, and by the end of the weekend, we were all best friends, and I knew I needed to do it again.
Oh, not a bad story. So how does it work, and how much money, Adam, do you need from these rich guys?
I'm seeking a $300,000 investment in exchange for 7.5% equity ownership in my business. Camp No Counselors, your all-inclusive sleepaway camp for grown-ups. At Camp No Counselors, we rent out sleepaway camps in their off-season and invite adults to come back to camp for fun-filled weekend getaways with their best friends. During the days, you'll play like carefree kids doing all of the fun classic camp activities like archery and wakeboarding, rock climbing and zip lining. And in the nights, you'll roast marshmallows around a campfire and party like grown-ups, dancing under the stars to unforgettable bands and DJs.
So where are they operating? How much does it cost per person? And how do you start mornings at this camp?
We start our mornings usually with Bloody Marys and mimosas.
Oh, wow.
Here's, you can grab a beer and don't forget your postcard to write home. There you are.
Thank you.
So this is very clever. Where are you doing this?
Currently, we're doing them in New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, and Nashville.
Are they in rural areas or?
So we work directly with summer camps. So they're usually, you know, a couple hours outside of the city. We provide round-trip charter transportation. We provide open bar all weekend long, all of the meals, all of the accommodations, all of the activities. And it's a very turnkey operation.
How much is it?
It is $478 on average for the all-inclusive three-night weekend.
Inclusive. That's not bad at all. The whole team should go.
Yeah.
Where do I sign up?
Open bar. Yeah.
Open bar. My goodness, they'll lose money on us. And what are the sales? That's what
last
we
summer
know.
We did four camps and we grossed $160,000. And now this year, we're doing 11 camps. We're having 1,800 people. And to date, we've grossed $730,000 and are projecting to do $800,000 this year with a profit of $165,000. We're starting to do some corporate retreats, but the biggest way that we're going to scale it is do simultaneous camps over a given
week. And so what's a typical camp cost you to rent? If it's $478 that somebody pays.
Right. Our cost is $278. Our profit is $200 per person.
Not bad. Mr. Wonderful, what do you think? In or out?
I particularly hate camping. I've made a rule in my Shark Tank deals that I use the products that I invest in. I would never go there. I just don't want to even think about this idea. I'm out.
Can you imagine Mr. Wonderful camping? Damon, in or out?
I'm not interested in a long-term exit. I like to ring the register every quarter or every year,
right?
And I think you have some liabilities ahead of you. You mentioned a couple of tough mutters and things like that, but those aren't overnight experiences where alcohol is involved.
Right.
And with those two issues, I just don't think it's for me, so I'm out.
Yep. Lori, in or out?
I think it's very clever, seems like a lot of fun, but right. I think the valuation's definitely out of whack. I just don't find it investable for me. I'm out.
Oof. Robert, in or out?
Money is not always the solution to grow every business.
Right.
Yes, it is.
And I don't see how my money is going to add value to you. I'm out.
Cuban, in or out?
The issue is that 7.5% is just nothing. If you're making $1 million a year in profit and you start to pay distributions, I get $75,000 a year.
Right.
You know,
it doesn't matter for you.
It's just not. It doesn't move the needle. There's just not enough upside.
So, how do we make it an upside deal so you're excited about it?
I mean, if you give me 25% of the business, I'll do it.
Cuban with the counter, will we have a deal?
The only way I would go as high as 25% is if everyone came on board.
For $300,000.
Yeah, you know what? That just makes it sound shady.
Because I want to scale this thing with the best people in the business.
I'm out.
Harsh.
Ouch. Yeah, but it was a BS. It was BS, and they were on to Cuban was on him.
Sounds like fun, though.
It does sound like fun. I think sometimes people just go on Shark Tank to promote their businesses. These guys didn't want the money, 7.5%. Give me a break.
They were actually bunking with other people. There was bunk beds. So you have to sleep in bunk beds in a room with a bunch of other adults. That's right.
Not
lost
for me.
Yeah,
imagine me inviting my wife on that. I get hit over the head. Hangler, speaking of my wife and speaking of stay-at-home moms, Hangler is up in the saddle and he's ready to go. He's geared up. And the subject is stay-at-home moms for Hangler's Rant.
Yeah, stay-at-home moms. Around last year, I just moved out here. I lived in L.A. And there was this advertisement by this company called Regenix. And the founder comes on the ad and he says this, quote, "Women are in the job force now more than ever. Therefore, they are subject to tensions and stresses like never before, and their hair is paying the price." I remember the first time I heard this, I was shocked. I'm sitting there thinking, this guy has obviously never spent a full day at home with his kids. Now, the tensions and stresses at home, they make my job feel like a weekend camp we were just talking about. I wrote down all the things that I experience at my job that my wife has no chance of experiencing as a stay-at-home mom. The stay-at-home mom has no advocates lobbying for her, no union, no one appearing on the media asking America to support their dedication and sacrifice for the most important job known to man. There's no boss giving them raises, no chats with coworkers over a Starbucks, no paycheck, no peaceful bathroom breaks, no uninterrupted phone calls, no personal lunch break, no praises from your boss and coworkers, no Christmas bonus, not even the luxury of getting into the car alone and listening to what they want to listen to. And when that vacation rolls around, mom's doing exactly what she does when she's staying at home with her kids. Now, okay, when I present this to some people, some women get up on their high horse and they say,
or their high heels,
or their, now we're getting really sexist. They get up and the response is this: well, I got my degree in teaching, or I got my degree in nursing, or if they went to culinary school, I got my degree in culinary, whatever it is, I don't want to waste that. I don't think they realize what they're saying.
Yep.
That they're wasting 4 years of their life on their kid. So they're going to outsource their kid to the local public school to be taught by the government for 12 years of their life, which equals 14,000 hours. Okay. Now I started to break that down, and there's this guy Vodi Bakum. Now I'm a Christian, but this applies for anybody. If you go if you send your kids off to these people, believe me, they're going to become like these people. And those kids, those fools they're going to be hanging around with at school, they're going to become like them too. You're great. You know, who are they going to socialize with if they're staying at home? Okay, well, now we're getting into the education thing, all right? So this is what Vodi Bakum says, especially this is out there for you Christians. He says, you know, because there's so many of us that end up not following Christ when we get older. And he says, we cannot continue to send our children to Caesar for their education and be surprised when they come home as Romans. That's because you're going to grow up to be like your teacher. And we had a pediatrician, and she got her PhD, and she actually took the full 12 years basically off to stay home as soon as she had kids to stay with her kids. She did not see it as a waste of education. She was spending it on the most valuable people in her life, her children. And she just studied and read, and when she came back to her job, she was that much wiser and that much ahead of the game because all these doctors that had been going to work weren't keeping up to the latest what do we call it, drugs and medications, and she was wiser because of it. So that's my rant. I can't believe these people think that they're wasting their education by staying home with their kids. It's just crazy. It's just crazy. It drives me crazy.
Edwards?
No, completely
agree.
You're
with him? I'm with him, too.
Especially the daycare center. I mean, that's even worse than the school.
Oh, I know. It's like, let's say you got a bunch of crazy six-year-olds and who you don't know, and you've got, like, mom. Who would you want the kid to spend the time with? It's crazy. Hengler, thanks as always for the rant. This is Lee Habib. This is Our American Stories. Catch all of Hengler's rants on OurAmericanNetwork.org. And also catch our This Days in History. I think there's 80 plus of them on OurAmericanNetwork.org. Anything from sports figures to our latest Bernie Marcus, the co-founder of Home Depot. This is Lee Habib. This is Our American Stories. More after these messages.
As you follow the presidential campaign, do you find yourself longing for a statesman and not just another politician? The people at Hillsdale College show what it takes in their latest free online course, Winston Churchill and Statesmanship. Our good friend Larry Arn, president of Hillsdale College, is a leading expert on Winston Churchill. This fascinating study examines Churchill's life, weaving history and political philosophy together in a course that will help you understand how and why Churchill was the greatest person of the 20th century. The course teaches how the duty of a statesman points upwards towards something outside of itself. You can access these excellent free online classes at hillsdale.edu. Look for the online courses at the top of the page. Hillsdale College has been pursuing the truth and defending liberty since 1844, and this course will help you do so as well. Learn how the virtues of Winston Churchill can impact your life and the life of our nation. Enroll today for free by going to hillsdale.edu and look for online courses at the top of the page.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard?
ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs, and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
John Nichols was making major strides in his career when at age 32, a water skiing accident left him critically injured. Fortunately, he had disability insurance.
For me, disability insurance was the safety net. I did not have to worry about the bills. I did not have the financial concerns.
Thanks to disability insurance that John had through work and on his own, he continued to receive an income until he could return to work. Learn more at protectyourpaycheck.org, a message from the Nonprofit Life Foundation.
This is Rick Osick, president of Famous Footwear. Our company is working together with the March of Dimes through March for Babies to raise money and awareness about the serious problem of premature birth in the U.S. As a business leader, I know that babies born very sick or too soon cost businesses billions of dollars each year, in addition to the emotional stress on employees and their families. That's why Famous Footwear is committed to raising funds to improve the health of moms and babies everywhere. Won't you please join us in the March for Babies? Start a team today at marchforbabies.org.
It's that time of year. It's commencement time. And this is Our American Stories. This is Lee Habib. And the team, well, they just cobbled together some of the great, great commencement speeches, some by famous people. We had a couple from students that were extraordinary. And we had one from a faculty member of Duke University that was the most dreadful commencement speech of all time.
So bad it was good.
It was so bad it was hilarious, inadvertently. So if you get a chance, go to ouramericannetwork.org and just find that Duke professor's commencement address. Today, this is a doozy. This is a good one. It was 2006, this commencement speech, at the Citadel. And it was no other than General Pete Pace. And he was a Vietnam vet, fought in every war since Vietnam. He was a Naval Academy grad, the first Marine to hold the titles of Vice Chairman and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And let's take a listen to how General Pace begins that 2006 commencement address.
Today's a great day. We were in the tank yesterday with the Joint Chiefs, and I told them I was coming down here to do this morning, and I said, what do you think I should say? And one of the unnamed chiefs said, just tell them you love them, shut up and sit down. I thought that was pretty good advice. But I'd be remiss if I didn't say a few more words than that. To the parents and family members who are here, especially the parents, congratulations to you. I know that today is a extremely proud day for all of you. And probably there's a tinge of financial relief as well. But I know as moms and dads and guardians and brothers and sisters that when you look down on these young folks in uniform, that you must have enormous pride in what you have done to make today possible for them. Families are fundamental. So fundamental in my belief that when I walk into my morning meeting every morning to the 15 or 20 individuals who are there to help me get the day started, I always say, cheery good morning, family. Because to me, family is what it's all about. And I hope each of you here today, and if you do the math, there's about 400 graduates and about 5,000 family members and friends here. That speaks volumes about the communities from which these graduates come and from the families from which they have learned their basic values in life. I hope and I know that everyone here in uniform will join me in thanking their families for your support. Now, for the class of 2006. Congratulations. You have worked hard, and you have absolutely earned the right to start at the bottom. There's nothing wrong with that. I'll guarantee you every single admiral and general on active duty today, and a lot of the retired guys too, would switch places with any lieutenant or ensign today. Why? Because what you are about to do, those of you who are taking your commissions, is simply going to be one heck of a ride. And those of us who have walked that path before you would do it again in a heartbeat.
Now, you won't hear many lawyers telling a graduating law class that, folks. And beautiful words to hear. You've absolutely earned the right to start at the bottom. And this audience got the joke. They laughed hard. They understood it. Honor culture here at Citadel. Not many places left in the country like it. Let us rejoin General Pace.
But this institution graduates more than those who select to join the military. This institution graduates leaders, leaders for many walks of life. And therefore, there are a couple of things I would like to say to you, no matter what you have decided as your path forward. First, grow where you are planted. Some of you are going to go to jobs that were not your first choice. Some of you in the military will go into specialties that were not your first choice. I guarantee you that wherever you go, there are individuals who deserve caring leadership. And if you will go to that job or that profession and give it your very best, I promise you that you will find it fulfilling and that you will continue to get promoted, because there are more good jobs than there are good people. And those of you who tackle whatever is given to you with all your strength and all your heart will shine and will get the next good job.
What advice? Grow where you are planted. Not go where your dream is and all the usual mumbo jumbo. I think that many, many commencement speakers, well, they push on the kids. This guy's saying, look, you're going to end up probably someplace you're not crazy about, and you're going to end up at the bottom. Good. This is fantastic news. Happens to all of us. And then grow where you are planted. Reminds me of Cast Down Your Bucket Here, the remarkable speech that Booker T. Washington gave in the Atlanta Exposition, where he was telling fellow African Americans, you know, quit moving around, cast down your bucket here, get to work, build things, own things. And grow where you are planted. And we're going to come back on the other side of this with more from General Pete Pace. And what I'd love to have you do also is go to Our American Network, Michael Bloomberg's speech at Harvard 2 years ago and at the University of Michigan last year were simply terrific. And a friend of mine just heard the Robert De Niro commencement speech at the Tisch School of Arts. By the way, he gave a very similar tonal speech to the young people, talking about life in the arts and how difficult it would be, that they were basically screwed because they weren't going to work regularly ever in their life. But he also said that's the nature of the beast, and that is a good thing. That's a good thing for you as an artist. And then at the end, he told everybody to be handing out his business cards because he was looking for a job. And somewhere in that audience was the next star director. What humility that took from Robert De Niro to say, hey, look, sometimes I still get rejected. And I'm Robert De Niro. And by the way, kid, here's my card. You got any jobs? Got a movie? Got a movie deal? Fantastic. And Peter Pace doing the same. He's not talking down to these students. He's not talking up to them. He's talking to them right where they live. And when we come back, you're going to hear an amazing story from General Pace about leadership, about him being planted from college and the academy to the killing fields of Vietnam. And what does a young man do leading men who'd been there many years before? Hang on to your seats. General Peter Pace on the other side of this break.
Every day, Our American Stories brings to you the Wall Street Journal Story of the Day with captivating interviews.
There is a kind of replicator staring us in the face which can spread from brain to brain.
Music.
One day in 1992, These Are Days came on the rock station. The song with Natalie Merchant singing had just been released and captured my existence.
Intriguing profiles.
If you get to know someone in a war, they might well die much sooner than you'd prefer.
Sports, movie reviews, and so much more. From what's trending in the culinary world to style and fashion. Travel, art, real estate, and careers are just some of the stories you'll hear from the Wall Street Journal. On Our American Stories, Wall Street Journal, Story of the Day.
The Wall Street Journal, America's Stories. You'll find it all and more at the Wall Street Journal. Subscribe today at WSJ.com.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
John Nichols was making major strides in his career when at age 32, a water skiing accident left him critically injured. Fortunately, he had disability insurance.
For me, disability insurance was the safety net. I did not have to worry about the bills. I did not have the financial concerns.
Thanks to disability insurance that John had through work and on his own, he continued to receive an income until he could return to work. Learn more at protectyourpaycheck.org, a message from the nonprofit Life Foundation.
I'm Jesse Gonzalez, Vice President at Kmart. Do you know that premature birth is the number one killer of babies in the United States, or that survivors can face a lifetime of serious health problems? But you can help. Join me in Kmart for the March for Babies Walk. We'll work together to raise funds for research and programs that help the March Against fight premature birth and birth defects and improve the health of moms and babies. Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
This is Lee Habib, and this is Our American Stories. General Pete Pace's commencement speech at the Citadel in 2006. And he's just graduated from the Naval Academy, and he's about to become the third platoon leader in 3 weeks as he begins his first tour of duty in Vietnam. Let's pick it up with General Pace.
Second, check your moral compass frequently. I have seen it both in combat and in peace. If you do not know who you are walking into a situation, you may not like who you are when you're done. When I was a lieutenant in Vietnam, I lost Lance Corporal Guido Farinaro from Bethpage, New York, a 19-year-old Marine, to a sniper. The first Marine I'd ever lost in combat. I was filled with rage, and I called in an artillery strike on the village from which the sniper fired. Between the time that I called in the strike and the rounds were fired, my platoon sergeant didn't say a word. He just looked at me. And I realized I was doing the wrong thing. And I called off the artillery strike, and we did what we should have done, which was to sweep through the village. And all we found in that village were women and children. I do not know how I could live with myself today if I had carried that first instinct forward. The time to decide who you are and what you will let yourself do is not when somebody gets shot, is not when your wingman gets shot down. It is before you get in that situation so you have an anchor to hold on to. This applies elsewhere. I have had the great privilege of watching and knowing real heroes in combat. I've also had the great privilege of watching and knowing great heroes around conference tables, where the discussion amongst many very senior leaders, each very powerful in their own right, each very articulate in their own right, was going in one direction. And somebody in that room says, I see it a little bit differently, and speaks their mind. That takes an enormous amount of courage. If you're wrong in combat, you may die. If you are wrong in a situation like I just described, where your reputation is on the line, you have to live with it. So when you walk into a room like that, it is well to have thought through who you are and what your fundamental beliefs are. Where is your moral compass? so that when the situation and the discussion starts going one way, you have already decided where you are. And the person who walks out of that room is the person you wanted to be the person walking into that room.
So that was point number two, check your moral compass, and what a story. Let's go on now with point number three.
Third, make decisions. In Vietnam, after we spent a couple of months in Hue City during Tet of 68, my company went on a patrol, and my platoon had the lead point on the patrol. I remember getting to the first decision point and calling back on a radio to my company commander and saying, you want to go left or go right? And he said, go left. I called a second time a little while later and said, you want me to go left or go right? He said, go right. I called a third time and asked him, what do you want me to do? And I got the butt chewing of my life over the radio. And basically, when you take out the curse words, what my company commander said to me was, Lieutenant, you are in charge. You make the decisions. I handed the radio back to my radio operator, Corporal Irvin, and I said, if the company commander calls, tell him I'm not here. Because I'm going to go start making some decisions. And I promised myself that day, 38 years ago now, that if I was going to get in trouble again, it was going to be for going too far. And I have gotten in trouble again. And it has been for going too far. And I've had a hard time explaining to my bosses who are chewing me out why I was smiling. And I was smiling because I did what I promised myself I would do. I was making decisions. Fundamentally, it is true whether you're in civilian life or the military. It is easier to get forgiveness than it is to get permission. Just go do it. That's why you're getting paid. That's why you're there. Make decisions.
Brilliant advice. And here's General Pete Pace at the Citadel in 2006 with his final point four.
Fourth and last. And this is the most basic. Take care of those in your charge. Whether you're fortunate to have one or 100 or 1,000 or whatever number of individuals it is who are looking to you for leadership, do all in your power to understand what their needs are and as best you can to provide it for them. You will not be able to do everything. You will not know everything. But if your subordinates know that you want to know what their problems are, that you do want to try to help, even if you can't get it right, your organization will bind together as a team better than you could ever demand. And they will freely give to you more than you could ever demand simply by doing the right thing, which is to take care of those in your charge. I would like to say just a few words to those of you who are accepting your commissions today. Thank you. Your country needs you.
Habib, and this is Our American Stories, and now it's time for our This Day in History segment, brought to us by Hillsdale College. And today we bring you the story of a man who was born today, a man who helped lead millions to be free, millions who might not be free if not for the life he led. This man was a pope, the head of the Catholic Church, a Polish man who was the first non-Italian pope in nearly 500 years, and the youngest 58, in almost as long. He was the third longest reigning pope at over 26 years, the most extensive traveler of any pope in history, because it's where the people were, visiting over 129 different nations and visiting these United States seven times. By now, you may know we're talking about Pope John Paul II, born on this day in history in the year 1920. Born bearing the name Carol Wojtyla, taking the name John Paul II when he became pope. For the hour, we'll bring you his life story and zero in on one particular story I referenced, his role in taking down the Soviet Union and restoring freedom to much of Europe. It's a story told in the extraordinary documentary 9 Days That Changed the World by Newt and Callista Gingrich and a dear friend of mine, Vince Haley, who helped. A great Catholic guy. Make sure to pick up the DVD at GingrichProductions.com. I promise. When I watched it for the first time in the Minneapolis airport, there's a scene in the middle of this movie, and I was not a Christian at the time. I was just weeping. It blew me away. And his life story will blow you away, and this story will. And so now we bring you some of the highlights, starting with Catholic theologian George Weigel on Karol Wojtyla's childhood in the small town of Wadowice in southern Poland, growing up in a modest apartment across from the local church.
He grew up there with his widower father. His mother died before he was 9 years old. And an older brother, a doctor, died when he was 12 years old. So the family was the father, a retired military officer, and young Karol Wojtyla. He was a brilliant student. He was, by his own testimony, obsessed with the theater. He was a great sportsman, hiking, skiing, swimming. He was a remarkable young man whose many gifts and talents were somehow integrated by his faith. From very early on in his life, he was a youngster of deep Catholic piety.
Wojtyla attends college, well, until he doesn't. Newt Gingrich brings us this story.
The son of the president of Wadowice's Jewish community, Jerzy Kluger, was a close friend of Wojtyla.
We are playing soccer, and when we are starting to play, to make two teams, the easiest thing was, let's play Catholic against Jews.
In 1939, Germany invades Poland. The Nazis arrest professors and close the university in Krakow. Compulsory labor is ordered for all adults and for all Jewish males aged 14 to 60. Concentration camps are opened. To avoid arrest, Wojtyla works in a stone quarry and later at a chemical plant.
Newt continues the riveting story.
During the war, Wojtyla helps form an underground theater company called the Rhapsodic Theater.
Rhapsodic Theater was aimed at keeping alive the memory of Polish culture at a time when the German occupation was determined to eradicate that culture, to kill Poland from the head down, if you will.
The idea of a Rhapsodic Theater is something incredible. Namely, it is an idea that you can fight with your enemy with a word, with a meaning of a word, with significance of a word.
So from that experience, I think he came to the conviction that the word of truth, spoken sharply, clearly, forcefully enough, had the ability to cut through the static of the world's lies in a singular way. And that was a conviction he would deploy to great effect later in his life.
In 1941, Wojtyla's father dies. He prays beside his dead father all night long. He later writes, quote, "At age 20, I was alone in the world, having lost all of the people I love." Here's George Weigel again on the young man's entrance into the priesthood and the role World War II played.
Karol Wojtyla's pilgrimage to the priesthood was an interesting one. As a young man, many of his friends and teachers thought that he was a natural candidate for the Catholic priesthood. He did not think that. He imagined his life unfolding as a Christian layman. in theater, perhaps later as a teacher of drama and Polish philology. I think it was the experience of the war, an experience that he once described to me as humiliation at the hands of evil, that began to intensify his reflection on what it was that God wanted him to do with his life. So in the fall of 1942, he approaches Archbishop Sapieha, the heroic leader of the Catholic Church in Krakow, and is accepted as a clandestine candidate for the priesthood.
And clandestine because the Nazis forced the church to largely go underground. An estimated 3,000 priests were killed during this time. Wojtyła said that this harrowing experience showed him the real meaning of the priesthood. And the suffering extended to Poland as a whole. Before the Nazi invasion, there were 3.5 million Jews in Poland. By the end of World War II, less than 10% of them had survived. So yes, humiliation in the face of evil. You bet. One-fifth of the entire Polish population would die during the war. It's just staggering. Some Poles refer to World War II as the war we lost twice. The first time to the Germans in 1939, and the second time to the Soviets in 1945. Pope John Paul II. We're covering his life this hour, and one part of his life in particular. The 9 days that changed the world. More after these messages. This is Our American Stories.
Producers.
We're the producers
at Our American Stories
on Our American Network.
And we would like to hear your story.
If you or someone you know has an interesting story that you would like to share with America,
simply email us a picture and a paragraph.
A picture and a paragraph.
To your story at OurAmericanNetwork.org.
Just a picture and a paragraph?
Yep, that's all you need.
Did you or someone you know serve in the military?
Tell us about it. Send a picture and a paragraph to
your story at OurAmericanNetwork.org.
Did you or someone you know have something dramatic happen?
We want to know about it.
Send a picture of yourself and a paragraph describing something that happened in your life that you would like to share with America.
And the rest of the world.
Has someone ever done something for you that changed your life?
Share it with us.
Share it with us.
Share it with us.
Or just having a bad day?
We want to hear about it.
We want to hear about it. Share your story with us on Our American Stories.
Your story is important to us.
And our listeners.
To share your story,
simply email us a picture and a paragraph.
To your story at OurAmericanNetwork.org.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste.
but get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
John Nichols was making major strides in his career when at age 32, a water skiing accident left him critically injured. Fortunately, he had disability insurance.
For me, disability insurance was the safety net. I did not have to worry about the bills. I did not have the financial concerns.
Thanks to disability insurance that John had through work and on his own, he continued to receive an income until he could return to work. Learn more at protectyourpaycheck.org, a message from the Nonprofit Life Foundation.
This is Holly Thomas, Group Vice President of Cause Marketing for Macy's. Our company is working together with the March of Dimes through March for Babies to raise money and awareness about the serious problem of premature birth in the U.S. That's why Macy's is committed to raising funds through our employees, customers, family, and friends to improve the health of moms and babies everywhere. Won't you please join us in March for Babies? Start a team today at marchforbabies.org.
This is Lee Habib, and this is Our American Stories. John Paul II was born on this day in history. And what a story. And we're focusing in on the summer of 1979, the 9 days that changed the world. And they did. And not enough people know about these 9 days, and that's why we're bringing them to you. And Newt Gingrich and his team, Newt, a Catholic himself, Vince Haley, a good friend of mine, a Catholic, they stumbled upon this story, and they just had to tell it. They had been visiting the Vatican and dug up some incredible archival footage for this remarkable story that we're really about to dig into now. The one Polish institution that came out of the war more or less intact was the Catholic Church. In 1958, Karol Wojtyła was appointed auxiliary bishop of Krakow and later appointed cardinal. The regime knew he could be dangerous, and they started doing, well, what every totalitarian government will do. They started investigating him. That same decade, the communists had built a city without a church and called it a workers' paradise. Again and again, the people erected crosses, and again, they were taken down. The city was called Nowa Huta, and it was Wojtyła who was responsible for the long, steady push to build the church there. And he just wore the communists down. There was one word that summarized his message at this time. It was love. Anything in this world, he said over and over again, could be solved through love. On October 16, 1978, Cardinal Wojtyła was elected pope, the head of the Catholic Church, taking on the new name, Pope John Paul II, and a new home at the Vatican. Only a few months later, he makes this announcement that puts the Soviet regime in quite a pickle.
In January of 1979, the Pope announces he will return to his home country to commemorate the 900th anniversary of the martyrdom of St. Stanislaus, the patron saint of Poland who was murdered by order of the king in 1079.
Well, for the communist system, it was a very difficult situation because refuse coming of the Polish Pope to Poland would be a disaster on the propaganda levels.
The authorities in the Kremlin, the men in the Politburo, rang up the Polish communists and said, don't do it. Brezhnev himself got on the phone and said, you're taking too big a risk. We don't want the Pope to come. And the reply was really, well, he has to come. The Polish people just would not tolerate the Polish government not allowing a Polish pope to visit Poland. I mean, the idea of keeping out the popes whose name was Karol Wojtyła, no, it was absurd. They knew it, and they convinced the people in the Kremlin. But both sides knew that they were taking a tremendous risk.
The Soviets didn't want him to come for 2 days during the anniversary of St. Stanislaus because it was an anniversary that would invoke the brutality of totalitarianism and a citizenry that stood up to it. So the Pope said, fine, I won't do that day, but I'll come for 9 days in June instead. A pretty nifty negotiator, too, this man. The new dates meant that the Pope would be there for the Feast of Pentecost, the traditional birthday of the Church, when the Holy Spirit descended upon the apostles and empowered them to preach and teach in the name of Christ. What a masterstroke. Something the Nazis and now the Soviets had long sought to oppress. Actually, I don't even think they even knew. That's the thing. This religious and now political significance of that day was not lost on the Polish people. Here's George Weigel and then Newt Gingrich on the significance of this trip.
The 9 days of John Paul II in June 1979 were 9 days on which the history of the 20th century turned in a dramatic way. One third of the country saw him live. Virtually everyone saw him or heard him on television or radio.
Within hours of his arrival, the communist leadership was deeply troubled. Pope John Paul II was challenging their regime.
To Communist Party leader Edvard Gierek, the Pope calmly asserts that Poland has the right to the formation of its own culture and civilization. It was a statement tearing into the very heart of the Marxist-Leninist lie.
The Pope then visits the tomb of the unknown soldier, bending over and kissing the tomb, paying tribute to those who fought for Polish freedom. It was a powerful strike against communism. And boy, this guy, the actor in him, understood the power of metaphor. The actor in him, by the way, it's no accident that he and Reagan both understood how to communicate nonverbally. And they did, particularly through silence. So when the Pope arrives in Warsaw's Victory Square for Mass, over 67,000 communist police officers would greet him and the crowd. 20,000 of them were undercover. These guys were scared. And the crowd started chanting, spontaneously, "We want God. We want God. We want God." Later on in the Mass came his homily. Here's University of Warsaw professor Krzysztof Meissner painting the scene for us.
I was there on the Victory Square on the 2nd of June, 79, when Pope John Paul II emphasized that Christ is the ultimate reference, is the ultimate emperor. People started to sing Christus vincit, Christus regnat, Christus imperat, a well-known song which says that the Christ wins and the Christ reigns.
And when they finished, they started clapping again. And John Paul could have gone on with his text. But he was waiting there, standing with his cross, waiting until the applause would end. And the interval was that of 14 minutes. He knew how people were repressed by their fear and how they needed this emotional liberation. And that interval of 14 minutes in his speech was a liberation from the fears and giving a sense of dignity and an opening of the assertive emotions and the capacity to be responsible for ourselves, not only individually, but for our social life, for our national life, for our political life, for our religious life. All this was what was coming to the fore in this explosion of applause.
And this was the scene that brought me to tears in that Minneapolis airport hub. A woman actually came over to me to ask me if I was okay. And I rewound it and showed her. I described the scene and did it, and she cried too. She was a Christian. I was a young, about to be, on the fence to become a Christian. The Soviet regime offered to broadcast this and other parts of Pope John Paul II's visit on national television. They did so for selfish reasons, hoping the ability for people to watch from their own living rooms would minimize the crowds. It didn't work. 3 million people showed up. at Victory Square for one event alone. Not only did it not keep them away, but now the elderly and homebound were able to watch what they would never have had the chance to see thanks to the regime. And yet, the state took its control of the media coverage to an absurd extreme.
There was not a single photo or panorama of how many people were there. So that was such a blatant lie, such a paranoid attitude, so that, you know, by such primitive and completely absurd means, they wanted to convey a message that, I don't know, he was alone or I don't know what.
The Polish media covered it in a bizarre way, showing little old ladies and nuns on television, but never the Pope. I mean, someone said afterwards that the Polish communist television coverage of this was like coverage of a soccer game when you showed everything except the ball.
It's George Weigel, and he's so good. He does so much of the coverage of the Vatican on NBC News, and just one of the giants of journalism when it comes to covering the church. By the way, I was a Russian lit major as an undergrad, and Russian history was a big thing for me. I don't know why, as a kid from New Jersey, but I was drawn to it. And I did not know this story, and I was in school at the time. I was in college from 79 to 84. Shame on my professors. I did not know about this story. The American media did not report this story. Shame on them. We're bringing it to you now. Thanks to Newt and Calista Gingrich and to Newt and to Vince Haley and Newt's team. And you're going to hear the rest of this great story when we come back. The 9 days that changed the world. We're celebrating the life of John Paul II. He was born on this day in history. This is Lee Habib. This is Our American Stories. More after these messages.
I went through that over and over and over again. He actually did commit suicide and saw that happen. And at that point in my life, I really went south quick. I started turning to drugs.
That's Mike Iglehart. He ended up in prison. And in prison, he found his father in heaven and turned his life around. He's now the biological father of two children with his wife, Terry. And they're also entrusted with the lives of 10 other children, all through the Palmer Home for Children. 10 children who were just like him, abused, abandoned, or neglected.
A man that had no father for his whole entire life and ran fatherless forever is now being able to be a father to the fatherless. I told him all. I said, man, I really wish there was a place like that that somebody would have put me in when I was a kid that was an opportunity like that.
Thankfully, there is a loving home for these children at the Palmer Home. 126 children are there today, and they can change so many more children's lives with your support. Consider making a donation today at palmerhome.org.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
John Nichols was making major strides in his career when at age 32, a water skiing accident left him critically injured. Fortunately, he had disability insurance.
For me, disability insurance was the safety net. I did not have to worry about the bills. I did not have the financial concerns.
Thanks to disability insurance that John had through work and on his own, he continued to receive an income until he could return to work. Learn more at protectyourpaycheck.org, a message from the Nonprofit Life Foundation.
Hi, I'm Dr. Sam Nussbaum with the Anthem Foundation. Premature birth is the leading cause of death of babies and disabilities for children. That's why we support the March of Dimes to help mothers have full-term pregnancies and healthy babies. Join us in supporting cutting-edge research, treatment, and outreach to help moms during their pregnancy and give every baby a healthy start in life. Learn how you can help at marchofdimes.org.
This is Lee Habib, and this is Our American Stories. And we're covering the life of John Paul II. And what we love to do here on Our American Stories is cover a particular aspect of a life, a particular snapshot in a life. We don't generally do beginning, middle, and end. Sometimes we do, as we did in John Jacob Astor. Go to This Day in History, listen to that one. It's the full suite, the same with Levi Strauss. But with John Paul II, this story about his visit to Poland in the summer of 79 is one that most Americans don't know. And so we thought we should tell it because it reveals so much about the nature of the man, the character of the man. John Paul became the first pope to visit Auschwitz, the Nazi concentration camp where over 1 million Jews were murdered. He understood the symbolic power of that. And I think he just needed to touch it and bring the world to it, and he knew he would on the visit. The Soviets wanted him to be there to send the message that the fundamental problem of the 20th century was Nazism. But the Pope realized this danger of being used. So while there, he specifically mentions that there are two totalitarian systems of the 20th century. Then came Pope John Paul II's last day of the 9 days in Poland. Again, here is George Weigel.
A day of intense emotion in which he asks them, begs them, as he put it, not to lose touch with their cultural, religious, national roots, and in which they give him the kind of farewell that can only be imagined in novels. He had touched the hearts of people in an extraordinary way. And what people commented on afterwards in terms of the effects of this was how orderly people were. I mean, all of these things could have turned into scuffles or even riots. And there was this tremendous sense of order. It's the kind of order that comes out of an intuitive feeling among people of solidarity. We're in this together. We each have a responsibility to each other to behave in a mature and serious way. So 14 months before the emergence of the Solidarity Movement, John Paul II has created the experience of solidarity during the 9 days of June 1979.
Indeed. And it's interesting, he said, don't lose touch with your cultural, religious, and national roots. This was John Paul II to the Polish people. And my goodness, I think at a time like this in America, a leader like that is so desperately needed, who can remind us of our cultural, religious, and national roots. I think too many of us don't know and feel the consequences of that in our culture, particularly. The Polish people looked at each other in the swarms of the crowd, felt their true strength in numbers, perhaps for the first time, and knew they could count on one another, whatever transpired next. Here's Catholic theologian Michael Novak and the Polish ambassador to the Holy See, Hanna Suchocka, on the trip's aftermath.
It was the beginning of the end. Because the Poles took heart that nothing could happen to them without it being magnified by the voice of the Pope.
It was impossible to work in a normal way. It had a special importance because we didn't know exactly what would happen after the visit, but we expected that something must happen.
The revolution would be peaceful, picking up on the Pope's primary message of love. A year later, labor strikes sweep Poland. The Workers' Day pledge to only end them if they can have the right to form independent trade unions and the right to strike in the future. A concession unprecedented in the history of communism. A concession the Solidarity Movement and its charismatic leader, Lech Walesa, won. The Soviet leadership didn't know what to do. One thing did happen. Pope John Paul II was shot on May 13, 1981, in an assassination attempt on his life. Many believe, including the Italian government and former CIA director Jim Woolsey, that the Soviet Union orchestrated it as revenge for his support of Solidarity. 2 years later, the Pope visits his assassin in prison. They would become friends, and the man converts to Christianity. In the year 2000, the Pope requested that he be pardoned. He was, and in December of 2014, he returned to Rome and laid 24 roses on the Pope's tomb. What a story. Again, love. This was the thing. On June 2nd, 1987, President Reagan and Pope John Paul II, friends and brothers in the cause for freedom, both gave speeches in Eastern Europe. Let's hear Reagan's at the Brandenburg Gate, where he famously said, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall," but where he also delivered this powerful and oft-forgotten spiritual message.
They erected a secular structure, the television tower at Alexanderplatz. Virtually ever since, the authorities have been working to correct what they view as the tower's one major flaw: treating the glass sphere at the top with paints and chemicals of every kind. Yet even today, when the sun strikes that sphere that towers over all Berlin, the light makes the sign of the cross. Yes, across Europe this wall will fall, for it cannot withstand faith, it cannot withstand truth. The wall cannot withstand freedom.
The wall cannot withstand faith, it cannot withstand truth, it cannot withstand freedom. Here's Newt Gingrich introducing Pope John Paul II's speech on that same day, and George Weigel on that speech's meaning.
250 miles away, in Gdansk, Pope John Paul II honors the heroic defenders of Westerplatz, where 180 Polish soldiers held off 3,000 German forces for a week during the First Battle of World War II. His homily is specifically intended for Poland's youth.
Każdy z was, młodzi przyjaciele, znajduje też w życiu jakieś swoje Westerplatz. Jakiś obowiązek, powinność, od której nie można się uchylić, nie można zdezerterować.
In dozens of sermons, addresses, impromptu remarks, he played a virtual infinity of variations on one theme. And the theme was, you are not who they say you are. Let me remind you who you are. You're a people formed by a distinctive history and culture. And if you own that again, if you make that your own again, you will have tools of resistance to this repression that the tyrants cannot meet.
You are not who they say you are. And by the way, what the Pope was saying in Polish to that audience was this: each one of you, my young friends, finds in your life your own Vester plot, a responsibility, a duty, which you cannot avoid, from which you cannot desert. On June 4th, 1989, Solidarity candidates won major elections, and by September had formed the first non-communist-led government in the Soviet Eastern Bloc. And on November 9th of that same year, the Berlin Wall came tumbling down, long the symbol of Soviet oppression. This story, Americans don't know it. We should know it. And that's how we wanted to bring you a snapshot of the life of John Paul II. He had faced totalitarianism and Nazism as a young man, and the humiliation. And as a moral leader of the Catholic Church and the free world, as he saw it, he had to face down another totalitarian threat, the Soviet Union. This is Lee Habib. This is Our American Stories. When we come back, the final segment on our This Day in History segment, John Paul II, born on this day in history.
Are you tired of all the talk about politics? How about talking about paychecks? Because that's what the Job Creators Network does. It's the voice of real job creators that's been missing. Led by Home Depot founder Bernie Marcus, over 50 job creators across the country are members.
Home Depot, if we started it today, we could never have succeeded with today's regulations.
Your voice is needed. If you're a job creator and interested in learning more, visit jobcreatorsnetwork.com.
Like campfires? How about a campfire atmosphere with friends and brought to your ears wherever you are? That's what we do at Our American Stories, a show that tells great American stories of love, final thoughts before dying, funny stories about first jobs, this day in history, American dreams and marriages, and so much more. And then here's your stories on these big topics live every weeknight, or listen online at ouramericannetwork.org. We'll hope you join the campfire and call in with your stories.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
John Nichols was making major strides in his career when at age 32, a water skiing accident left him critically injured. Fortunately, he had disability insurance.
For me, disability insurance was the safety net. I did not have to worry about the bills. I did not have the financial concerns.
Thanks to disability insurance that John had through work and on his own, he continued to receive an income until he could return to work. Learn more at protectyourpaycheck.org, a message from the Nonprofit Life Foundation.
Hi, I'm Rick Osick with Famous Footwear.
Did you know that premature birth is the number one killer of babies? That's why we support the March of Dimes in the fight against premature birth. Join us in supporting cutting-edge research, treatment programs, and outreach to help moms have full-term pregnancies and healthy babies. Learn how you can help save babies' lives at marchofdimes.org.
This is Lee Habib, and this is Our American Stories. This day in history always brought to us by Hillsdale College. And it's where you can learn all the good things in life. Learn about art, history, politics, philosophy, theology, the classics. A true, true liberal arts education in the real meaning of the word liberal arts education. And if you can't get to Hillsdale, well, Hillsdale can come to you. Terrific courses online, many of them, all of them free. Go to hillsdale.edu to get those courses. And we're talking about John Paul II and the 9 days that changed the world, the summer of 1979, the first Polish pope comes to visit Poland, and the Soviets at the time were in charge, and they didn't know what to do. And he just ran circles around him with a simple message of love, of Christ's love. And, of course, the Soviets didn't much believe in freedom of religion, let alone freedom of expression. The Pope knew better. So at long last, as we left the story off, the Berlin Wall had come tumbling down. We now know the role John Paul II had in that important event. I think many of us knew about Ronald Reagan's. Many more knew about Margaret Thatcher's. But it was really, my goodness, this moral force in the center of Europe. And again, don't expect the American media to cover this. That ain't ever going to happen. On the Pope's role, one of the founding members of the Solidarity Movement said this, quote, "They said he had power, but he did not have power. He did not have an army. He did not have arms. He did not have troops. But his power and his arms were the truth. And that is the most dangerous weapon for criminals." And this was a criminal enterprise, the Soviet Union. In 2001, Pope John Paul II was diagnosed with Parkinson's. In 2005, he was nearing his final days. Holy Week of that year comes, and for the first time of his papacy, his health prevents him from leading Palm Sunday Mass. Here's the CNN feature, the last days of Pope John Paul II, on what transpired from there.
He would miss most of Holy Week.
Et dignite nobis de vita nostra.
Instead, he watched it all on Vatican TV. At a time when Christians around the world were commemorating Jesus' last hours, the Pope's absence was symbolic. Then, on Easter Sunday, the 84-year-old pontiff made his way to the window above St. Peter's Square, wanting desperately to see and speak to his flock, who wanted desperately to hear their Pope. But the words would not come out. The microphone pushed away, the Pope's frustration evident. His close friend, Archbishop Jivic, was by his side. In his book, Let Me Go to the House of the Father, Jivic writes, "After John Paul returned from the window, he said, 'It might be better that I die if I cannot complete the mission entrusted to me.'"
There was a lovely kind of poetic arc to all of this, because if you think back to October 16th, 1978,
Cardinalem Wojtyła.
When Karol Wojtyła of Krakow was elected as John Paul II, when he came out onto that central loge of St. Peter's Square,
con aiuto di Dio,
and gave the blessing and then started to improvise. And if you remember, the papal master of ceremonies actually reached for the Pope to pull him away as if to say, "Holy Father, this isn't how it's done." And Wojtyla slapped his hand away, said, you know, from that moment, it was clear, I'm going to be Pope my way. And there at the very end, you know, that Easter Sunday when the Pope was there at the window for that 12-minute period, you know, trying to speak and just being utterly unable to do so. And at two different moments, his aides actually tried to roll him away from the window when once again he slapped their hands away as if to say, here at the very end, I'm still doing this my way. You know, I think there was something marvelously appropriate about that.
You bet. And after such a painful experience, Pope John Paul II carries on, and you will not believe what he does next.
3 days after Easter, the Pope tried to speak to the masses once more.
We even tested it beforehand.
Archbishop Jivic remembers the Pope's rehearsal and his frustration after his second failed attempt.
I wouldn't have given him the microphone if I didn't think he could speak. But maybe it was the emotion of the moment, or God just wanted it that way. When he gave the sign of the cross, it was very moving. And then, nothing.
This would be the last time the world would see John Paul.
Through his inevitable suffering, through his last moments here. But he was teaching something very important. This Pope who had teach many people around the world how to live was also teaching in those moments how a person can die.
Indeed. And if you remember, when he just didn't speak and he allowed that audience to just clap and to chant, we want God. And now he was letting them see him in this frail condition. That's humility. That's a total lack of pride. That's everything a good Christian should evoke. And he did it just naturally. And of course, the authorities in the Catholic Church or the minions wanted to control him. Impossible. The Soviets couldn't. And the bureaucrats inside the Vatican probably often shook their heads. Here's George Weigel on what happened after Pope John Paul II's death.
In the week after John Paul II died, 3 million people came to Rome, effectively doubling the city's population. Many of them were young people. Many of those young people knew that they were not going to get within a half a mile of the funeral service itself. And yet they felt they had to be there. They had to say goodbye in person. They had to pay their respects to a man who had summoned them to lead lives of moral heroism.
And on April 2nd, 1984, on April 2nd, I'm sorry, 2005, John Paul II.